So for your sins, you end up seeing me in the VAICU. That's mostly where I was, VAICU. Ask Shisa. He survived a couple of rotations. Even my brother from a different mother over there. He caused a lot of trouble last month, remember?
Yeah, I was not bringing up.
Yeah.
It's all right. If I start fading out, just let me know, okay? So we'll talk about acid-base stuff. I'm not going to talk too much about the physiology and the pathophysiology. That's kind of tedious. What I want to show you is a method to analyze blood gases. And if you follow this methodology, which is fairly straightforward, a couple of questions, some simple calculations, you will get virtually all acid-base problems at medicine board level. I emailed it to the address of the VA chief at the VA dot whatever, that email. So if anybody wants the thing, it's in a PDF file that can be sent. Some basic definitions. Things like alkalosis, acidosis, OSIS, is referring to a process. It's not referring to the pH of the blood, per se. What I mean by that is, when you have an acidosis, you may have a low pH, or you may not, depends on something else that's going on. When you have an alkalosis, your pH may be high or low, depending what else is going on. So some standard definitions, depending on which hospital you're at. Am I blocking that screen for you guys? Can I stand there?
No, it's fine.
You're fine. No.
I'm sure enough, anyway. So, alkalemia is a high pH above 7.44. Low pH, acidosis is a low pH below 7.36. For a chief resident, put him on the spot. What does the P in pH stand for? Not the H. If you don't know what the H stands for, you shouldn't be a chief resident.
It's true.
I don't expect you to know this. This is one of those idiotic, trivial questions you never get. Anyone know?
Brian.
Yeah, he's smart. We said power. German word for power, potence. There's some German-sounding guy invented pH a long time ago. Negative log to the base 10 of the hydrogen ion concentration. But most hospitals that I have been working pH. So acidosis can be subdivided into the following: respiratory or metabolic. And the metabolic can be subdivided into two. Now, obviously, all of these can be acute or chronic, so that's taken as read. So metabolic can be with a high anion gap or a normal anion gap. The other name for this is hyperchloremic. That's synonymous with that, meaning the chloride's high. And anion gap is, we'll talk about in a moment. Or alkalosis can be subdivided physiologically or pathophysiologically into the following. Chloride responsive, which is a shortened abbreviation for saying fluid response. This largely means somebody is volume depleted on diuretics or throwing up. And the other form is, guess what? Chloride non-responsive. Pretty easy, right? If I go too fast, slow me down. Respiratory is very easy. You're looking at the blood gas, PCO2, either it goes up or down. All you have to remember is what happens to the pH. If the PCO2 goes up, the pH goes down, and vice versa. Now, very important in this slide, I put CF is the correct term because the word VS in grammar is adversarial, like a Kramer versus Kramer or a movie type thing. CF is the Latin for confer, meaning compare with. Semantics, but growing up in England, they made us speak bad English correctly. And amazing enough, when I came here, I had to do a test of English as a foreign language, even though I grew up in England and could speak nothing but English. $50, it was the very easiest exam I ever did. And he didn't ask me what sidewalk and pavement are, all those Americanisms. Anyway, but notice, respiratory means CO2 change compared to expected and normal. Now, all of you know what the normal is, whatever, 40. But there are situations when your normal and your expected aren't the same. So sometimes you've got to reference the change in PCO2 to what it should be in that particular scenario. For example, pregnancy or in asthmatics, we'll talk about later on. Metabolic is a change in serum bicarbonate. Or correctly, if Dr. Baker's around, or any renal doc will say, it's not serum bicarbonate, it's small t CO2. But everyone says serum bicarb because it's less work. Okay, homeostasis means what? Staying at home, right? Home static, right? No. All of you have been through chemistry, like my daughter's doing in high school. Anyone want to define a buffer, chemical buffer? Because you are my buffers between the patients and the admissions and at night, and so are the fellows. I got three levels of buffers. I got fellows, residents, and nurses. Wow. What's an acid-base buffer do? Let's pick on Danny, my good buddy there. See, if I know your name, I'm going to pick on you, so hi. Good job. Good answer, but you fell for a classic mistake. Don't. If you sound like you know what you're talking about, I could ask you what PKA actually stands for. I don't want to know what PKA stands for. You all know. He's right. So if you just add acid to water, the pH will drop, or bicarb to water, the pH will rise. A buffer ameliorates that change. So the final pH change is not as bad as it would be. There's a load of different buffer systems in the human body. The one we're using for our lab test is the system of the bicarb anion and PCO2, and which is connected by the enzyme carbonic anhydrase. That equation, don't worry about right now. This ratio is what the body is trying to use as a marker of the final acid-base problem. Remember, CO2 is a gas, bicarb is an electrolyte. What I've left out is a solubility coefficient. Again, don't worry about that. This ratio needs to be kept as, conceptualize it as a constant ratio. When that ratio gets out of whack, you have an acid-base problem, as I elaborate. Now, qualitatively and quantitatively, it's not the most important buffer in the human body. There's a boatload of more proteins in bone. There's a lot more bone than there is bicarb in the body. So the bone is actually a more useful buffer for the human body. The way to remember that is renal failure, chronic renal failure. If you don't control the pH and acidosis, the bone buffers it, and you get renal osteodystrophy. Anyway, we're using this. One basic assumption you have to understand is, if you remember your inorganic chemistry, in a closed system at equilibrium with three different buffers, if you measure one buffer system, it tells you what the other two are. The assumption is a closed system at chemical equilibrium. None of us are closed systems. We're probably at some kind of chemical equilibrium, so it's not quite true. But there's no easy way to measure the buffering, the acid-base pairs for hemoglobin, bone, and protein. So we're using that. All right, so that's a narrow pH. Now, let me point something out. If you convert that to hydrogen ion concentration, we're talking about nanomoles per liter. Nanomole. A nanomole is 10 to the minus 9. Every other electrolyte you measure is in milli something. So it's more important for the body to control hydrogen ions than sodium or potassium. A 1 millimole change of sodium is equal to a million nanomole change. So in other words, pH is and hydrogen ion concentration is 1 million times, actually it's 6, 3, 6, yeah, it's 1 million times more tightly controlled than electrolytes. The difference between 10 to the minus 9 and 10 to the minus 3. So we look at this ratio in the bottom. Very briefly, this talk's going to start very simplistic and it'll very rapidly get complicated and put you to sleep. Metabolic means something is causing a decrease in bicarbonate. Either you're losing it, such as from diarrhea, but the English way with an extra O, or you're not making, or you're adding acid. Metabolic alkalosis is the reverse. You're adding alkali or losing acid. Respiratory is a change in PCO2 that goes up or down. And again, all of these can have acute or chronic. We'll talk about. This part's easy, so I'll go quickly. Compensation. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about this bicarb ratio. Let's say the top, the numerator, the bicarb goes up. If this goes up, you have a metabolic alkalosis. The compensation is to retain CO2. So if this goes up, to compensate, the CO2 goes up. Let's do the reverse. Suppose the carbon dioxide drops down from a respiratory alkalosis because you're hyperventilating. Eventually, this will drop to compensate. So you're already seeing a pattern. If any primary disorder of this or that, whichever way it goes, the other parameter moves in the same direction to match. So a trick for board questions, a tip, not a trick. If you ever see labs that show the PCO2 has gone one way and the serum bicarb has gone another way, you have what we call a mixed acid-base disorder. And if nothing else, you can eliminate the simple acid-base disorder. Let me explain what a simple versus mixed is. A simple is one of the four basic things, metabolic acidosis or alkalosis, one of the two respiratories, plus the compensation. A mixed disorder is any combination of up to three at a time. I'll give you some examples later on. So if that's going up and that's going down, or vice versa, opposite directions, it's going to be a triple acid-base disorder. You can read that faster than I can see that, so go from there. So that's just one example. Any questions so far? In basic physiology, when you have a metabolic problem, kidneys or GI stuff, the lungs have to compensate. The lungs compensate by either breathing faster or breathing slower. There's a limit to how fast you can hyperventilate. There's a limit to how slow you can breathe. So that compensation is limited by obvious factors. But it's very quick. We can change our respiratory rate within minutes. The reverse is true for the kidneys compensating for respiratory problems. The compensation is more complete but takes a bit longer. So to put it in pictorial terms, these two things work together. If this is wrong, let me ask a test question for BC. Is that a lung or a kidney I'm pointing to?
That would be a lung.
Very good, so you're going to pass forward. All right, let's pick on somebody else. Hard question. All right, Amir, is that a kidney or a lung? Good, okay, so Cheryl, we're teaching him well. So if this goes wrong, that fixes the problem. If this goes wrong, that fixes the problem. Again, this is not new to you, but the next stuff will be. Now, before I go into this little spiel, if you already have a system that works, don't change it. There's actually three different ways of doing acid-base analysis. The method we're teaching you right now is traditional, but it's biochemically actually not correct. There's something called a strong ion difference, which is really complicated, and it's more physiological and more accurate. But the end result is, even though this is technically wrong, it works out the same. So if you have the SID in your undergrad courses, stick with it. Most of my generation don't want to spend time learning something else that when this works fine. So we're talking purely about the analysis of a blood gas. I've got examples during this, and I've got examples at the end which we can talk through. First of all, you need a blood gas and a Chem7. You can't do a full acid-base analysis without both. You also need a serum albumin for internal medicine level analysis. If you're a surgeon, you can just get by with the blood gas and be done with it. All right, you're going to ask yourself a series of questions, and one of you bright sparks wants to write an app for this thing. This is really easy to program, I would argue, because you basically have a series of questions where you're going to have a binary or a trinary option, and you're going to fall down a simple pathway that will give you an answer. There's no complicated equations, except you have to know how to multiply, add and subtract, and fairly simple numbers. There's no powers, there's no logs, there's no square root of negative 1. So the first question is the pH high, normal, or low? That's easy, okay? Alkalemic or acidemic. And whatever the pH is, high, normal, or low, always look at the blood gas pCO2 first. What you're trying to figure out is the pCO2 and the blood gas match the pH. So if the pH is normal and the pCO2 is normal, that's fine. If the pH is normal, 7.4, and the pCO2 is abnormal, then something else is going on. Similarly, if the pH is alkalemic, if you think it's a respiratory problem, you'd expect the pCO2 to have dropped. If the pH is acidotic and you think it's respiratory, reverse would happen. And I got some examples. So the first question, does the CO2 match the pH? This is a qualitative question. If the answer to that question is yes, you do a quick quantitative analysis with a very simple equation. So these are the changes at the bottom for blood gas pCO2 of 10 for a change in pH. Now, depending on what source you'll use, some books use 0.08, 0.09, some use 0.03. I'm choosing 0.08 and 0.04 because they're easy. They're related by factor of 2. So acutely, you get a much higher pH change, and after compensation, you'll get roughly half the change. And just remember 10 and 0.04. So let me get to the examples. All right. Easy question for somebody. Let's pick on our chief resident again. Which is the normal row?
Top one.
All right, good job, man. All right. Actually, the correct answer is it might be normal, right? It might be abnormal in some people, right? 7.440. By the way, an exam question, unless you're told otherwise, you assume 7.4 and 40 is your baseline, all right? There are situations where it will not be, like chronic COPD, where the CO2 baseline might be 50 or 60, but you don't know that for sure. Okay, very easy one. 7.48, I'm going to walk through the question, I just elaborate. pH is high, that's alkalemic. If I look at the pCO2, it's gone down, which is the direction I expect it to go down for a pH to go up, if it is a respiratory problem. 40 minus 30 is the change in pCO2 of 10. 40 plus 0.08 is 7.48. So that's easy. That's a respiratory alkalosis, nothing else. Any questions on that? Save your questions for the harder ones. If you ask me a question on this, that's embarrassing. Okay, now, I've gone the opposite way, all right? PCO2 has gone down, I've gone down further. PCO2 has gone down to 20. 40 minus 20 is 20. 20 is 2 times 10, all right? Even your calculator impaired generation should be able to figure that out. 22 times 0.08 is 0.16. 7.40 plus 0.16 is 7.56. Piece of advice, for the decimals like 0.516, forget about the 7, just add the 16 to the 40. To me, it's easier to add whole numbers than a decimal. I don't know why. I find it easier to add 16 to 40 than 0.16 to 7.40. But you may not find that, but try that. Those two are easy, okay? Now we add a little bit more. Now we go in the opposite direction. Not quite. So the pH is low. You all agree, 7.32. Acidemia. We don't know if it's acidosis yet. It's acidemia. The PCO2 has gone up, correct? From 40. So there's some degree of respiratory acidosis. 50. So let me see. Who's in track? So for that change in 50, there's a mistake on this thing, I think. What's wrong with this thing? I think I got this wrong. Some 50. Yeah, that should be a respiratory. There's a misprint there. That should be a good point. That should be, this one here should be respiratory acidosis. I thought I changed it. Guess I didn't change the original version. So this one here should be a respiratory acidosis, right? You agree? I put metabolic alkalosis deliberately to throw you off and test you. When you make a mistake at a PowerPoint, you make it a learning point. That should be respiratory acidosis. You all agree? This one here should be another respiratory acidosis, but further along, right? I just wanted to change that yesterday. Now we get to the more complicated one. Look at the 60 and the 7.30. pH is low, acidemia. PCO2 is high, right? So there's some degree of respiratory acidosis, as this line should have shown. But for a PCO2 of 60, you'd expect a pH of 7.24, right? On this line here, again to reiterate, that should be respiratory acidosis. If it was 60, you'd expect 7.24. Now, 7.30 is higher than 7.24. It's higher, meaning it's more alkalemic, right? So again, this is the wrong way around again. This should be respiratory acidosis plus metabolic alkalosis. You agree, Patrice?
That's right.
I just want to change this damn thing. You know why? I did this to my wife to present, and I think she edited this stuff. It's always good. Blame the wife over everything. So again, when I... Remind me to send the corrected email out to you guys. I'll redo it. I can change it today. So just to summarize, in this slide, that's respiratory acidosis. This is respiratory acidosis plus metabolic alkalosis. I was too busy working on the animations to pay attention to the content. That's the lesson. Don't spend time sputting around with the animations. Pay attention to the content. So the reverse, PCO2 of 20, right? A low PCO2, which should cause alkalemia. So the pH is 7.48, but if you look up here, 20 should be 7.56, and that is 7.48. So 7.48 is lower than 7.56, meaning this is a metabolic acidosis and a respiratory alkalosis. That's the only one I got right. So let me change this so I don't confuse you all. We've got time. So that one is let me change this real time. So 7.32. That should be respiratory acidosis. You agree? Sheesh, you make sure I change it the right way. Okay? That's correct. This one should be further, another respiratory acidosis, right?
Yeah.
And this one should be
respiratory acidosis and a metabolic alkalosis.
The last one is correct. So I just want to make sure I fix it right now. So, okay. Let's look at that. Does that make more sense to you now? Get right where I'm at? Respiratory acidosis. Respiratory acidosis plus metabolic alkalosis, because that's pH is a little higher than it should be, and so on. Okay, focus on the last two rows. For that CO2 of 60, you'd expect the pH to go down, which it has. But 60, if you look up to here, should have gone to 7.24. 7.3 is higher than 7.24. 7.3 is alkalemic. That's where you get the metabolic part, and there. Now, the reason it's metabolic is you can't have two respiratory things at the same time. You cannot have respiratory acidosis and respiratory acid alkalosis and acidosis at the same time. Either you're breathing fast or you're breathing slow. This one here, the PCO2 has gone down, the pH has gone up, which matters qualitatively. But for that CO2, 20, it should be 7.56. And he said it's 7.48. Is that clearer now? It's always good to confuse your audience. And you pass the test by spotting the mistake. All right. Okay, next one. Next question. So just looking at the pH and PCO2, you can tell quite a bit. You can tell if it's purely respiratory, or you can tell if it's respiratory plus a metabolic problem. And that's quite a bit for most people to do. The next thing is look at the bicarb. Is it going to be high or low? It tells you if you've got a metabolic process. Whatever the bicarb is, especially if it's low, calculate the serum anion gap. Sodium minus chloride minus bicarb. All right? Now this is a bit more complicated, but we'll get to that in a moment. We'll briefly list the causes of metabolic anion gap acidosis. You may have remembered mud piles or mule pack. So methanol, uremia, DKA, infection, iron. I'm calling it high lactate, not lactic acidosis. I'll tell you why in a moment. Ethanol, salicylate. Hang on. Going back the wrong way. The reason it's called lactic acidosis is a misnomer. Any of you who've been with Dr. Rashke will explain that. But lactic acid is never an acid in the human body's pH. Its pKa is about 2 to 3. We never get to a pH of 3 in the human blood. So lactate is never, the acid is not coming from the lactic acid. The acid is coming from somewhere else. Actually, the process of creating lactate takes up a hydrogen ion. Now, if you remember your Bronsted definition of an acid, acid is a proton donor, alkali is a proton acceptor. So anyway, when Dr. Rashke or Dr. Bejo is around, don't call it lactic acidosis. Call it hyperlactatemia-associated acidosis, which is a mouthful. But if you say that, he may ask you why. So you may open up to more questions. Okay, now this is the hardest part of the whole lecture. It's called the delta gap calculation. You only do this calculation in the setting of a metabolic gap acidosis. So you do not do this in the setting of a metabolic non-gap acidosis. And you do not do this in any metabolic alkalosis or any respiratory. This is purely to be done in a metabolic gap acidosis scenario. What you're trying to do is see if there is something else going on metabolically. The answer to that question may be yes or no. All you may have metabolically is a metabolic gap acidosis. Or you may have a metabolic gap acidosis plus a metabolic alkalosis. Or even less likely, you could have a metabolic gap acidosis and a metabolic non-gap acidosis. That's a pretty weird concept, and I'll show you in a moment. Here's a simple calculation that helps you analyze this. The one on the left is your bicarb you're trying to calculate. This is what you're actually given on the Chem7. This thing in brackets is the change in anion gap. So this is, because it's an anion gap acidosis, the actual anion gap has obviously gone up. It's gone up by some amount. What it's gone up to minus the normal is the delta gap or the change in anion gap. Add that to the bicarb you've got in the Chem7, and you end up with what I call the corrected bicarb. Here's an example below. Bicarb is 8, so obviously metabolic acidosis, right? Low bicarb. Anion gap is 34, which is very high. So metabolic gap acidosis. The reason I'm putting 10 there is just to make the calculation easy. It actually may be 12 or 8, depending on the lab. But let's make it 10. 34 minus 10 is 24.
24 plus 8 is 32. Now, to analyze this last corrected bicarb, we have to know what the normal serum bicarb is. It's about 24. So in this scenario here, that line, the example, is a metabolic gap acidosis with a metabolic alkalosis. Now, if you just looked at the 34 and the 8, you would never have figured that out. Here's some examples coming up. Another way to comprehend this thing is people with gap acidosis didn't have the gap acidosis all their lives. At some point in time, they didn't have a gap acidosis. And you're trying to see if something else is going on before that began. The assumption for that equation to work is this, which is not quite true, but it's good enough for most purposes. All right, let me see. So I'm going to put it in words, and I'm going to give you some examples. The corrected bicarb is that equation I showed you. If it's higher than normal, which is 24, implies the presence of a metabolic alkalosis plus the gap acidosis you already had to do this calculation. Make sense? No, if it doesn't make sense, you'll be like I did when I first heard about this concept. The reverse is true. If the corrected bicarb is low, say 15, then they both have a gap and a non-gap acidosis, which is quite difficult to have. The renal tubular acidosis from DKA, from diabetes, DKA gives you the gap acidosis, and RTA from diabetes would give you the non-gap. So here's an example. Corrected bicarb. On the left is your baseline anion gap of 20, which is elevated. Bicarb is low. So that's easy, right? That is a metabolic gap acidosis. You agree? How much has the anion gap gone up by? What's 20 minus 10? All right? So there you have it. Okay, that's easy. Now, the hard part. The change in anion gap is 10. You add that to the bicarb. What's 10 plus 5? Is that a low serum bicarb or a high serum bicarb? Okay, 15. So you have a metabolic gap acidosis, and because that's 15, that's still a gap. That's still a low bicarb, but you cannot blame that on that high anion gap. You've already factored that in. So what's left is a metabolic non-gap acidosis. This is not very common, but at least it's theoretically possible. Does that make some kind of sense? Let's do another example. Okay, anybody want to tell me what's going on from that box? Okay. Very good. All right, hard part. So what's going to be the box over here, anybody? Fernando, if you get this right, you get in the fellowship. If you don't, you're in trouble. No. Just kidding. That's not true. You get into fellowship on other parameters, not if it's right. And if you don't know, fine, but what do you think? What's the second metabolic process? Look at the 20. Is that low or high serum bicarb, this 20?
It's going to be low.
Yeah. So if it's a low serum bicarb, means what? Yeah, right. Actually, no, sorry. That's the change. 20 plus 10 gives you 30, sorry. Now, does that give you the answer?
No.
So you agree with that? Yeah. Yeah, so you're right. The gap acidosis plus the metabolic alkalosis. This is the tricky part. This horizontal, the second bar. You've got to add the change in anion gap to the bicarb, and if that's higher than normal like it is here, 30, that tells you there's a metabolic alkalosis, right? And this is somewhat confusing, and it's okay to forget this in 5 minutes.
Okay. Can I say something real quick? In your books, there's a chart. Mm-hmm. It goes through all of this using your exact method.
Yeah. Which books?
Dimitri's book.
All right, good.
There is a slight misprint, the PaCO2.
Oh, there is?
Yes, on respiratory alkalosis, the PaCO2, it should be less than 40, not greater than 40.
See, even the books can make misprints.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a little confusing. Go ahead, Danny.
Is it possible to have a physiological bicarb level of zero?
I doubt it. The lowest I've seen is, I think, about 5 or 6. I don't think you could possibly have zero. You'd be dead. If your serum bicarb is zero, you have no carbon dioxide at all in your blood. I don't think that's feasible with compatible with life. Do you?
I don't believe so. So does that mean that, given that, the second part of the question will be the lowest that you can get is 5, let's say 4.
Yeah.
So and if you have a N-ion gap, delta N-ion gap, N-ion gap is 30,
mm-hmm.
and delta N-ion gap is 20.
Yep.
And if you have a, and the light drop doesn't go any lower.
Yep.
So as long as you have any N-ion gap larger than 30,
yep.
you will definitely have a metabolic envelope.
Yes, I agree with that. That's a good insight there. All right? Let's move on to something a little easier. So that was all about metabolic gap acidosis and the delta gap. We're still talking about metabolic gap acidosis, but now we'll talk about the compensation for that, meaning the respiratory compensation. This is a lot easier. That part there was quite complicated. Some of you may have seen that done in the form of a sodium chloride ratio. And that's conceptually the same concept of a sodium chloride ratio. But I challenge you all to to divide 143 by 116 and give me an exact number. You can do this addition and subtraction much quicker than long division. But if you could do that in your head, the sodium chloride ratio, I think Dr. Rashke was taught that, gives you the same answer. Anyway, let's move on to the respiratory compensation for metabolic acidosis. You have to use something called Winter's formula. Winter is the name of the person, not the season. And basically what you're looking for is what should the lungs do to compensate for a metabolic acidosis. It doesn't matter what sort of acidosis you have. Your lungs don't see gap or non-gap. The lungs only see metabolic acidosis, and you hyperventilate up to a certain point. Those of you who remember your algebra, remember, leaving aside the plus or minus 2, that's the equation of a straight line. The slope is 1.5, intercept is 8. But what this really means is if the bicarb was 0, which is not really possible, the lowest PCO2 you could theoretically get would be 8. This is a population-based graph equation, not a biochemical. So you use this to calculate what the CO2 should be for your serum bicarb. For example, easy question. If the bicarb was 10, and I chose 10 for an easy answer. Dr. Johansson, tell me what the PCO2 should be if the bicarb was 10. Yep, 23 plus or minus 2. See? Okay, now we have a similar table, and I hope I haven't F this one up either. Bicarbonate, PCO2, and interpretation, right? Normal up there. Okay, over here, the 10 and the 21 to 25 is what Ben just said. You would interpret that as metabolic acidosis. You don't know what sort of metabolic acidosis, but there's appropriate compensation because the lungs are doing to the CO2 what the equation says it should do. It's lowering the PCO2 from 40 to 21 to 25. There's a fudge factor here because it actually was based on a lot of dots and a regression line, so there's error there. 30, with a bicarb of 10 and a PCO2 of 30. First thing you'll fall for as a trap, 30 is below 40, right? Unequivocally, 30 is less than 40. If normal is 40 and 30 is less, you would call that respiratory alkalosis if you looked at it very simplistically. But remember I said about 20 minutes ago, the PCO2 change compared to normal or expected. With a bicarb of 10, you expect it to be 21 to 25, not 40. So the normal value of 40 doesn't apply here. With a bicarb of 10, you'd expect it to be 21 to 25. Now 30 is higher than 21 to 25, correct? Because it's higher than it should be, that's respiratory acidosis. So this row here is metabolic acidosis plus respiratory acidosis. What will throw you off is the fact that that 30 is less than 40. That's what threw me off when I first got it. Understand it's the PCO2 change compared to normal or expected. Expected trumps normal. In this case, the expected value, as Ben said a few minutes ago, is 21 to 25. Let's look at the third one down here, the last one. Bicarb of 10, a PCO2 of 15. That's lower than it should be, right? So the patient is ventilating faster than they need to be. Metabolic acidosis and respiratory alkalosis. Now, clinically, which is more dangerous for you to see in terms of the patient? Is this patient in more trouble than this patient? Or you can't tell? That one, right?
Yeah.
And it's worse because for some reason they're not being able to either get to normal or they're undercompensating. They might be tiring out, too weak, too much, no lung reserve, myasthenia gravis. This is a bad problem, right? That patient is not doing what they should do. It's a matter of semantics whether you call it metabolic acidosis and respiratory acidosis. You could call it metabolic acidosis and insufficient compensation. That's a semantics. Either way, you're correct. That's the worst situation in this. In the last row, the patient is overcompensating, creating a respiratory alkalosis, so they have plenty of room to go. So an asthmatic who has that kind of thing would be in trouble there. Right, let's go to the next one. What's next? This is just saying verbally what I just said in the previous slide, okay? You can skim that quickly. I'll move on. It's done. What's next? Now we're going to talk about the non-GAP metabolic acidosis, which is again fairly easy. Now there's another gap in medicine. The biggest gap will be what your debt is and what your earning potential will be. It's going to get worse as the years go by. There's a urinary anion gap. So if you're measuring electrolytes in the urine, what cannot be present? You cannot be on diuretics. You can't be in renal failure. You can't be in any drug that screws around with sodium excretion and potassium excretion. It's a sodium plus the potassium minus the chloride. All you have to know about this is the value is normally less than zero because you don't spill much sodium, you don't spill much potassium, and you have a lot of chloride in the urine. So chloride is numerically larger than the sodium and the potassium, so the value is negative, below zero. That's normal. A negative urine UAG is normal because there are two types of a non-GAP acidosis. You can blame it on the kidney or blame it on something other than the kidney. If it is a kidney problem, then this value will be messed up because for that to be normal, the kidney has to work. So if this value is a value like plus 10, plus 20, there's something wrong with the kidney. And you could say it's a renal problem. If this value is negative, the kidneys are doing what they should be, and whatever is causing the non-GAP acidosis is non-renal. And that's really only what? Diarrhea. Remember, diarrhea causes non-GAP acidosis, and vomiting causes metabolic alkalosis. Easy to remember because you're throwing up acid and you're vomiting, so alkalosis, and your diarrhea, you're losing bicarb. As an example, all right, I'm going to state that more explicitly here. RTA is renal tubular acidosis. Make sense? If it's a negative value, it's something, kidneys are doing what they're doing, and something else is going on, right? Diarrhea. Okay. Now we're going to finish off with metabolic alkalosis. Good, we've got time to do lots of questions. You're either adding bicarb or losing acid, or both, right? For example, in commonest things we'll see will be throwing up and diuretics. So you want to check the urine chloride, and again, same thing applies to urinary anion gap. You can't be on drugs that mess up urinary chloride, like diuretics. If it's low, it's synonymous with a chloride responsive state, meaning volume depletion. So example of this would be vomiting. You're throwing up, you're losing acid, you're volume depleted, or you're on diuretics. Stop the diuretic and give them sodium chloride and fix the problem. That's easy. The harder one is a high chloride. Now what I can't figure out, every time I've looked at this, the actual cutoffs are a urine chloride less than 10 implies low, and greater than 20 is high. Now, I've never been able to find out what you do in the middle. I think it's less than 10 and greater than 20. I don't know what you do if it's 15. Cheryl, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, I think it's 10 and 20. It's some. The numbers don't overlap.
Uh-huh.
Okay, mixed disorder. This is the most complicated, and this is what you'd expect to see on medicine boards. If you see a simple acid-base disorder as an option, it's probably wrong. It's too simple. A normal pH may be normal. That's a reason I say that, because you may have a normal pH if two opposite things are going on. An acidosis and an alkalosis, if the patient is very smart, he could buffer himself, do the calculations, and get up with a normal pH. But, see? So don't make the mistake you might make in an ER. Oh, patient can't be in DKA because his pH is normal. DKA is not defined by the pH alone, right? So here's an example. I think the example's next. I already said this earlier on. Let me reiterate that. You cannot breathe fast, you cannot breathe slow at the same time. Either you're hyperventilating or hypoventilating, right? You can change, but any given time you'll have one or the other, right? The only way to have two respiratory problems is if you have a chronic problem, say chronic respiratory acidosis from COPD, chronically have a high CO2, chronically have a high bicarb to compensate, and then you get agitated or excited or infected. You can have a respiratory alkalosis acutely on top of a chronic respiratory acidosis. But you can't mix two acutes and two chronics and respiratory. That's impossible. If you ever see that on a question, that answer has to be wrong. That makes your chance of getting the question right went from 1 in 5 to 1 in 4 just by doing that. I already told you this at the beginning. If bicarb goes up and CO2 goes down or vice versa, the answer cannot be a simple acid-base disorder. So even if you can't do anything else in your board exam question for the acid-base, those 2 points might narrow your options from 1 in 5 to maybe 1 out of 3. All right. So here's some examples, all right? You can have up to 3 at a time. As far as I know, there's no way to have 4 things. And this is not a full list. Metabolic gap acidosis, say DKA. Metabolic alkalosis from throwing up from the gastroenteritis that you got the DKA. And then you're breathing fast because you're sick. Okay, that's probably the commonest, I would say. DKA with the metabolic alkalosis. And if you have an infection, you probably have respiratory alkalosis. A metabolic gap acidosis, again, DKA. Metabolic alkalosis from saying chucking up, throwing up. But now you have COPD or myasthenia gravis and you have respiratory acidosis. Another option, another gap acidosis and a non-gap, which is rarer, and then respiratory acidosis. So you can see the patterns, right? When if you're really good at math, you can work out how many possible combinations there are, but I'm not doing it. Now let's do some interactive questions and open. Anybody can answer this in any order. It doesn't matter if you get it wrong. Think out loud. This will work through the example. Let's go with the most senior person for the easiest question. So put Ashish on the spot. What's that? That's easy.
So it's an acidosis. PC2 is high, so it's looks like a respiratory acidosis. Mm-hmm. And then, are there any more questions about it?
Okay, keep going.
Well, just looking at the compensation, if you went up, baseline's 40, so you went up by 40, so acutely you would be up by 0.04 is acute, times 4 would be 16. So then, so it drops appropriately. No,
it doesn't.
No, so it's only by 8, so it needs to go down.
So what he's saying correctly is that he knows because he's experienced. At 80, he should have given you a pH much less than 7.32. It's 4 times 10, because it's 40. 4 times 0.08 is 0.32. So that pH should actually be a 7.08. Yeah. Because it's higher than what it should be. In other words, for 80, it's gone up 40 points. 40 divided by 10 is 4. 4 times 0.08 is 0.32. 40 or 0.4 minus 0.32 is 7.08. So for that CO2, as he was saying correctly, that pH should be 7.08. The pH is higher than it should be, hence the metabolic alkalosis. Make sense? Eventually, you want to do the calculation. You just know after a while that 80 and 7.32 don't work.
So which one is acute? Is it 0.04 or 0.08?
Acute is 0.08.
8.
Because the chronic is less, so it's half the change because you're after chronicity, you won't change your pH as much.
Okay.
All right. Here's a different one. Anybody else want to try that? Or as a group? Let me ask the question as a group. You can all answer as a group. Is that pH high or low? Is it acidemia or alkalemia?
Acidemia.
2 for 2. Okay. Is that PCO2 high or low?
High.
All right. This is like a church, isn't it? Has the PCO2 gone up by 20?
Yes.
All right. For that rate, is 20 equal to 2 times 10? Yes? What's 2 times 0.08?
6.
So what should the pH be? What's 7.40 minus 7.16?
7.4.
So we all agree that should be 7.24, right? Right? And is 7.10 lower than 7.24?
Yes.
All right. Is it more acidotic than 7.24?
Yes.
All right, see, it's like a church of the acid base thing, right? Acute respiratory acidosis, you all agree with that, right?
Yes.
And you all see the metabolic acidosis. Very good. You all go to acid base heaven. But it makes sense, that third bullet, right? It's amazing, just with those two numbers, you can get quite a lot of crap out of this stuff. And that's pretty impressive. We've got time, haven't we? It's 11:01. Bicarbonate 10, is that high or low?
No.
All right, so meaning metabolic acidosis or alkalosis?
Acidosis.
All right. Anion gap, is that high or low?
High.
So now what do you have?
Metabolic.
All right. The change in anion gap is 20. What is the corrected bicarb? All right, is that a high bicarb or a low bicarb?
High.
All right. So that gives you metabolic gap acidosis from the first two bullets. And as you correctly said, metabolic alkalosis. Very good. See, we just, those two numbers, not even a pH, you figure that out. All right, is that high or low?
No.
Metabolic alkalosis or acidosis?
Acidosis.
All right. Anion gap, high or low?
High.
Okay,
We're going to call normal 10, even though it may not be. What's the change in the 9 gap? So the corrected bicarb is? So is that a low serum bicarb or a high serum bicarb? Okay, can it? So what's the second acid-base problem going on? Yeah, I can't think of many situations that can occur, but theoretically it can. So the gap acidosis is from those two bullet points and go from there. All right, a few more. Low, that's low, and that's, is that appropriate? First of all, is that CO2 a normal CO2? A normal CO2? No. Normal is 40, right? So if you fall for that trap, you would call that respiratory alkalosis. But you're now smarter than that. As Ben said a few, about 10 minutes ago, what should the PCO2 be for that? Winter's formula?
21.
About 21 to 25, okay? So this is exactly where it should be, right? Agree? So it's 10 times 1.5 plus 8 plus or minus 2. That's Winter's formula. Bicarbonate 10 and 40. That is objectively a normal CO2. So you may fall for that trap and say there's no respiratory problem. But I just told you the CO2 should be 21 to 25. So is 40 greater than 21 to 25?
Yes.
If it's higher than it should be, is that respiratory acidosis or alkalosis?
Yes.
Now, semantically, you could call that inappropriate respiratory compensation. You could call it undercompensation, or you could call it that. Ultimately, they all mean the same thing, right? The key point is all of you realized or said, this patient is in trouble. There's something stopping them breathing fast enough. Maybe you oversedated them with Ativan or morphine, or they got weak muscles or something. All right, how many left to go? We have 5 more slides to go. Low or high? Normal, right? Or low, abnormal? So already, what do you know so far? It's the same as the previous slide. No trick question, same as the previous slide, right? Now I throw in the triple, now I throw in a little spanner here. So looking at the first two bullets, you know two things. First of all, it's a metabolic acidosis with respiratory acidosis from those two, right? But now I throw in the anion gap, which is up, which means metabolic gap acidosis, metabolic alkalosis, and respiratory acidosis. Now, how did I get the metabolic alkalosis? The change in the line gap is 40 minus 10, which is 30. 30 plus 10 pushes your serum bicarb up to 40. So you would not have figured that out without doing that. Again, ultimately, this is more academic than real life, because it doesn't always change your treatment. I'll give you an example when it might. All right. You guys doing okay? We're almost finished. Oh, are we going to move on to just some causes and treatments, just listing? This is not exhaustive. Metabolic gap acidosis, so salicylate, you dialyze them, right? Or you can wait it out. Renal failure, well, you do whatever you do for renal failure, right? If you're at the VA, you do very little. If you're here, you put them on CRRT for no reason, right? That's basically what happens, right? You get CRRT when your creatinine goes to 0.6 here. Lactic acidosis, which is a misnomer, right? The treatment is not bicarbonate. Let me go out on a limb. I'm in that school of thought that bicarb for lactic acidosis is actually idiotic, stupid, and unfounded. You're treating a number. The lactic acidosis is not a bicarb deficient syndrome. It's a high lactate problem. The treatment is fix the problem. So the answer is not giving him bicarb. There's actually evidence that giving bicarb can actually cause harm. Now, I'm not going to fault you if your pH is low and you're just going to wimp out and give him bicarb. But academically, there's very little evidence for bicarb. However, since we're not going to be judged by Dr. Rashke and Dr. Bejo in court, we're going to be judged by Joe Schmo, who watches the Kardashians. He's going to give you, you want to practice cover your ass medicines, you'll give him bicarb in real life. But I think, Cheryl, you'll agree. Academically, we don't want to teach you that bicarb is the correct treatment for a lactic acidosis. DKA, is bicarb the correct treatment for DKA? It's not treating the underlying problem, right? Yes, if you're wimpy and it gets to 7.0 or 7.1, if you're not such a wimp, you can give it. Insulin fluids and treat whatever the trigger is. That's easy. By the way, DKA as a secondary, you should be able to write the orders without even seeing the patient. Then you go back and fine-tune it. As soon as they tell you it's DKA in the ER, you can write your orders and start fine-tuning it later on. Methanol overdose, dialysis and some other antioxidants and Dr. Curry's team to the rescue. But if you consult him, he'll regale you with too many equations and formulas and ask you questions you won't understand. metabolic non-GAP acidosis. I spelled diarrhea incorrectly just because I live in this country. Treat the diarrhea. Treat the cause. TPN is a rarer cause. TPN generally is mixed with the chloride salt, sodium chloride, potassium chloride, and all the rest of it. So if TPN is causing a non-GAP acidosis, the nutrition people will just change it from the chloride salt to the acetate salt. Acetate requires the liver to convert to bicarb, so that bear that in mind. How much TPN stuff do you actually do? You just write TPN, it magically happens, right? No fine-tuning, right? Metabolic alkalosis, the commonest stuff is nasogastric suctioning in a hospital. Replace the same fluid, sodium chloride with some potassium, or stop suctioning. If you're vomiting, check for pregnancy, I guess. Replace with normal saline. Respiratory alkalosis, okay, this is common. By the way, on a board question, in septic sepsis, the first primary acid-base disorder in sepsis is not an acidosis. Eventually you'll get an acidosis from high lactate, but the first thing in sepsis or infection is a respiratory alkalosis. That's a good medicine board question. The first acid-base disorder in major infection or sepsis is respiratory alkalosis because you're hyperventilating from the stress. So infection, head injury, alcohol withdrawal, anxiety, and pain. These two are quite difficult to treat because you have to sedate them a little bit, but pain, it's not that difficult sometimes. Acidosis, that's easy. Over-sedation, COPD, neuromuscular disease of some sort. I think that's it. And unfortunately, I didn't put you to sleep. You've got 7 minutes before Blumster gets here. All right. Now, let me email this, the correct form to so the VA. Who's the VA chief now? Is it?
Hi.
So the first one's going to be wrong, okay?
Sure.
So you learned something. If you make a mistake, as she's on your PowerPoints, make it a learning point.
Okay.
It was part of the quiz.
Right, Cheryl? That's the best way to do it, right?